I'm Justin Bourne of Real Kipper and Bourne. What's up, buddy? How you doing this morning?
You know, I'm great. It is a absolutely beautiful Toronto morning today.
Yeah, wow. I like your energy, too.
Yeah, even it's more beautiful now that we get to talk to Bourne.
Right? Yeah. So handsome.
Simp.
Yeah, we're bringing that one back, eh?
Yeah, no, yeah. Simps. I need a simp.
I need a simp.
So, man, this is nuts. The Leafs are playing so well that every night I just expect them to win. And maybe that'll shift, you know, when they play the Avalanche or they play a team that's a little bit tougher. But I don't know. Some of these teams have put up pretty decent regular season records this year. And I'm supposed to believe that, you know, the Nashville win was a good win. And anytime you beat Boston, I don't care what the record is, it's a good win. And they've had some good ones on the calendar. It's not like there have been none. But I keep finding myself in disbelief almost at how confident I feel, despite this group having been a good regular season team, despite the way that they ran through the North Division last year. There's just this different quality, this different maturity to them, and there's just this different level of, it never really feels like the other team is all that in it, and it feels surprising when the other team controls play and actually feels dangerous for some stretches. What has been most impressive to you about watching the Leafs play so far over this last stretch of success?
Well, it's the toughest part from an analysis perspective, but what's been most impressive for me is Jack Campbell. Like, I know Freddie Anderson was a good goaltender for this team for years, but, like, I am, you know, to your point about feeling, like, surprised at the comfort level, I cannot believe how confident I am that Jack Campbell is going to make the saves he's supposed to make and probably a couple that he's not supposed to make. It's just, he's been an unbelievably stabilizing force for them back there. And then I think sometimes what gets lost in the shuffle is, you know, you look at the third D pair, and sometimes the tendency is to, well, I mean, I've complained about it this year that it doesn't have, you know, toughness or this edge or whatever, but, like, God, Rasmus Sandin is really good. Mm-hmm. And everyone getting the chance to play with him has been solid too, so it doesn't feel like there's these guys that you throw over the boards at any point in your back end that are really going to, I don't know, make some colossal error that ends up in the back of your net. So the D and the goaltending all the way through just leave me a little bit more confident than I expected to this year.
Yeah, I was talking about this a little bit earlier with Frank Saravalli about how I almost feel like Jack is getting a little lost in the shuffle because they've had Wall in and he's played well the last couple of games. I've actually liked what he's done, but also you'd have the whole argument about, well, who did you play against and how many shots did you face or whatever. But Jack Campbell plays well every single night. And I feel like just because the Leafs are controlling play and the Leafs are winning these games, that sometimes we look at it and go, wow, I'm really expecting, you know how many times I've been betting Leafs unders? Like, I bet the under again last night and I teased it at 6.5 and it was actually a weird sweat that I hated at the very end where I was like, are you serious? Dude, this is the last two goals. Where thank God I teased it at 6.5 and just didn't leave it at 6. But he's been rock solid all season long. And I can't believe some of the ways that we've shifted the conversation around him from, hey, is this guy going to be able to hold up over the course of a regular season? I guess we don't know the answer to that yet. Or is this fraudulent? Or how much of this is going to be in an actual season? And such a big part of it was getting Mrazek. And yet, like, a massive part of me betting these unders is I feel like he just has yet to really let in a stretch where there have been soft goals. Like, he just makes saves. He's just making quality saves. He feels calm in net. I actually have a theory for you on him quickly. I actually also think that there's something too. And I pitched this to somebody who played the other day. Having a goaltender in the room that's just completely low maintenance when you're coming off of the Freddie Anderson experience. And this isn't to drag Freddie, but he was known as a little bit of a high-maintenance guy, right? Needed certain things his way. He's a personality in the room. He's kind of, I would say, more of a sulky guy. And you'd never have to pick up a teammate like Jack Campbell. And I wonder how many times when the Leafs in the past had been going through kind of some rough stretches, and you know there were those times where Freddie's play would be amazing and everyone would talk about how great he was, but then the times where it was low, I always felt like he was probably the kind of guy where you had to pump his tires a little bit. And now you just have Jack Campbell who's around, who's always like happy, like go-lucky dude. Things are going well. He's been playing pretty steady, and I wonder what that's done to the mentality of the room, just having a guy who is just a little bit maybe easier to be around on a day-to-day basis or who you don't need to, like, do anything with. He's just there. He's independent. He's on his own.
Yeah, you know, the old thing is, like, you know, winning cures all, right? And so sure. I feel like when you've got, like, a goalie that's super high maintenance, whoever you think would be the most in that variety, but I think of, like, guys that, like, Ilya Brizgalov when he was at his weirdest peak, no, but also much. Playing good.
That's not even high maintenance. That's, like, a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's almost that's an outlier. But it's like, if you win, everyone kind of gets along, and they're buddy-buddy, and you move along, you know. everything's been great. Jack's been playing great. So we've, you know, it's been all positivity and roses. I know when the Leafs lose a little bit and Campbell goes in front of the press and, you know, self-flagellates and really, you know, puts on a whole show about wanting to die because he let in a goal. Like, I don't know, man. There might be another level of high maintenance to that I wouldn't want to deal with as a player. So I think it's the winning. You know, my thing with Campbell is, I saw an article in The Athletic that had mentioned a stat a goalie track called freeze rate, you know, where basically every time, how often when the puck hits a goalie does it actually end up in a whistle? How often does he collect it, no rebound, and it turns to a stoppage of play? I don't have the stats in this. This is pure hypothesis. I'm guessing Campbell is very good at that. It just feels like there's no mad scrambles. God, do you remember the worst of Garrett Sparks when he'd be swimming in his crease and he'd be rebound, rebound, rebound? He'd make 28 saves in a row and everyone's like, wow. And I was like, well, that could have been easier if he just caught one. Campbell catches them.
I especially remember it because you and I both stand really hard for Garrett Sparks.
Yeah.
And then it was a disaster.
And no one would have remembered it if he didn't remember it.
He let in 100 goals against Chicago, and he was like, I think I did a really good job tonight. And I was like, oh, boy.
It honestly wasn't even the performance. It was him sticking up for himself. And we were like, nope.
No, man, you let in all the goals. So you can't be happy with that.
By the way, Bourne, if you ever wanted confirmation that your eye test tracks with the analytics, per Money Puck, Jack Campbell is second to only Carter Hart in puck freezes above expected.
Oh, beautiful.
Very
thank
cool.
You, thank you.
Puck freezes above expected is a stat I never thought would exist, and yet here we are.
It probably doesn't.
Oh, my God.
I could be making this up, and you guys have no idea.
I was
just
going to
say, I actually feel sometimes that half of these stats that come out of the hockey ones, like where it's like battles won, I'm like, who's tracking this? Like, who's doing battles won? What's a battle? Like,
worst part, JD, the worst part is like they're daring you to call them on it because you definitely haven't tracked it.
And
so it's like, oh, sorry, do you have a model? Okay.
And if you do, they're like, this guy hates trying to give you information. You're like, I'm sorry, can I question the information? Jeez.
So how much about the Leafs being able to dominate the road games this year, how much of that is a big confidence boost for the team when they come back home knowing that they just slayed on the road? And there's obviously a huge, I would say, disadvantage at times, especially on the east, on the West Coast. So, like, what are you thinking that they feel coming back being like, we just crushed it 4-0 on the road?
Yeah, I just think there's a real sense of this. If I'm in the room, we're thinking we're a good team. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, you can go on runs. You can have a 5-game winning streak and suck. The Anaheim Ducks have done it this season. You know, there's a number of teams that can go on tears. But I think you're at the point in the season now where you step back after a road trip like that and go, huh. Like, you know, we weren't exceptional. I don't think the Leafs were the best version of themselves, but they just kind of beat worse teams. You know, they played well enough to beat worse teams, and I think that really sets them apart. So there should be a confidence there going into games against good teams, just knowing that they are legitimately one of the better teams in the league at this point. Man, I mean, I can't remember a time where the Leafs walked away with games. They've won by 3 goals or more in 4 straight games. Like, you barely had to watch the third period. It's been a really bizarre run, and that should give a lot of confidence.
One of the things that we've noticed, obviously, in terms of this road stretch and the last couple games, is Matthews getting goals in back-to-back games. He's starting to get that 5-on-5 performance a little bit better. Not that it was a talking point before, but it was something that we thought was going to get improved with time. So is he playing better, or is this just kind of a little bit of regression to come?
I actually don't think he's played great.
Oh, okay.
I watched he tipped another puck in last night, and there's goals in 3 straight games at 5-on-5, and I don't know. I don't know if he's in play. I'm not saying he's played bad. It's not even a saucy take. He's just been okay.
You know,
he's been fine. You know, like, part of me was thinking last night, like, I wonder if the Zach Hyman effect is real. Like, does this guy need more pucks to handle, to get more opportunities? I think he's been fine. He looks like a 40-goal scorer in the NHL. That's unbelievable, right? But he doesn't look like a 60-goal scoring Rocket Richard winner to me.
Here's the thing. He doesn't care what you think. No offense.
I know. I heard that. No, that was aimed at the other three-letter network. There.
That's right.
Not us.
My favorite part was when he was like, none taken. I was like, okay. Well,
yeah. Sounds like you took some.
Yeah, sounds like you took a little there, buddy. I think he's starting just to regress. Like, that's all this is. You're right. Like, this isn't some meaningful uptick in terms of the way that he's played, but I just think it's, hey, this is a guy who was shooting, what, 5%? And now some of the 5%ers, tip a couple, shoot a couple in. It's looking a little bit better, feeling a little bit better about himself. I will say that the line has looked better to me. And I don't, and this is where I wanted to go with this next, is that, you know, you were, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you weren't as high on maybe Bunting as some others were early on, right? Like, not fair. That you weren't high on Bunting, but just with them in particular. Like, you didn't really see the fit. I remember that you did some video breakdowns of just, hey, this is why this isn't the ideal situation for these guys. We've done a lot of, hey, he's not Zach Hyman. Hey, it's a lot to put on this guy that he isn't Zach Hyman. But, here's the only thing, though. All those Zach Hyman stats, remember? And it was like, boy, Zach Hyman's going to light the world on fire. Bunting has, guess how many less points than Zach Hyman?
I don't know, four?
One.
Oh.
Wow.
One. One less point. And I feel like that needs to be mentioned here. That,
yeah, absolutely.
So are you starting to see any signs of improvement or reasons for added optimism with Bunting in those two?
Yeah, I really am. I thought he was wonderful, and the line did look very good. You know, I think I mentioned earlier on in the season that for Bunting, a lot of what seemed to be happening was him trying to figure out what he was in the NHL. Like, is he going to be an offensive player? Is he going to be a agitator, a puck hunter? You know, he seemed to be able to do a little bit of everything. And you remember Sheldon had the quotes earlier in the season about showing him video and staying on him and trying to get him to hang onto the puck a second longer. I feel like this trip, I saw more moments where he had the confidence to make plays with the puck and be involved in the offense and kind of find himself a little bit. So for sure, there's definitely a version of Bunting now where you go, okay, you know, if he's like that, I can see how this works. I think he's got 19 goals in 47 NHL games, I think I saw last night. Like, he's obviously a guy who can put the puck in the net. So if he can play a consistent game on the days he's not putting it in, I think there's a fit to be had there.
Actually, 17-49. You got your second digits twisted. You lost your analytics cred from the expected freeze rate.
Supposed to come on here and be the expert, you idiot.
Well, now that you have a Sportsnet stats backup guy, I can just say stats and Blake will check it for me. It's awesome.
I don't have access to all that stuff yet, but
just a little inside baseball here. But we actually have just a thing called Blake Does Our Homework, where like I just write down a thing in the doc where I'm like, hey, are they good at this? Like, where's the and then Blake just actually comes with them all. It's amazing. It's literally.
God, I gotta
like,
get one of those. That's
I know.
Great.
It's called an intern for you.
It's like an open book exam, except for you actually know where to look in the book. You know, like because open book exams.
Oh, overwhelming.
School,
you're just flipping through pages the whole time. Like, you get nothing done. Like,
oh, I have a highlighted section for this, and then you realize that you highlighted half the textbook in your panic trying to prepare for this exam.
Why did I highlight the paragraph on volcanoes?
Yeah. So. I want to ask you, Justin, I know I don't want to turn positives into negatives, obviously. The Leafs have gotten some credit, especially from us here, for being a better defensive team this year. And obviously they've done a really good job winning tight games. And sure, you'd rather be kicking the doors off of teams 5-1, 6-1 in terms of projecting them forward. But it feels like, at least narratively, that winning those tight games gets you a little bit more ready and says a little bit more, even if analytically that's not accurate. Digging into the numbers, though, this is a team that is actually allowing a little bit more or a few more shot chances per 60 at 5-on-5 than last year even. Obviously, those numbers aren't everything, but when you watch this team and how they've performed defensively, and there's a huge Jack Campbell component, but is this a matter of the team having a little bit of good fortune and a little bit of Jack Campbell, or is that, hey, this team is maybe giving up better shot or more shot attempts, but they're doing a better job at controlling where those are coming from and the danger of those?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a topic that's worth digging into from a statistical look, and this is something I can check today in terms of, like, are they
giving
up less...
Oh, you're going to plagiarize it again, eh?
Are we going to give up less rebound chances? Is there less, less slot shots? You know, what specifically are those numbers telling us? I don't know about you guys, but, like, looking at this team, I feel more confident in their defensive play than I did last year. You know, there's the old, okay, last year they played six teams, three of them at least were garbage, maybe four of them. You know, could there be some, you know, some factor of their opposition was different? So it definitely is worth looking into why the numbers would be that way. But I feel more confident in this group and their overall defensive play from a systemic standpoint. That's actually probably the wrong way to phrase that. But anyway.
Systems, I feel like, is just the word you can use.
Yeah, system standpoint, sure. But I will say, I don't feel quite as confident were they to get into these really close, you know, tight checking games and they had to defend a little bit more. And we haven't seen them against enough good teams lately. You know, I feel like Zach Bogosian made me feel comfortable in those type of games. And I'm not sure I'm going to feel as confident once it tightens up against better teams later in the year.
Yeah, I liked your thought on Sandin because this is going to be a really weird comparison, so strap in. But he actually reminds me of Kawhi a little bit in the sense of, you know, Kawhi was so efficient and he did things so quietly that you'd look at the box score at the end of the game and be like, Kawhi had what? Like, I felt like he took like 8 shots. He didn't do anything. It's like 32 points and 12 rebounds. You're like, I didn't even notice him at all. And I feel like that was Sandin a lot of the times where the puck's moving really well in the offensive zone and they're controlling play. And I'm like, man, what are they doing here? And then I'm like, oh, right. It's Rasmus. He's snapping it around. Like, he's just in the right spots. He's making the right plays. He's making the right passes. It's all just kind of efficient. And he doesn't really... The times you notice him are usually the bad ones where he's trying to defend the front of the net and someone's just like, I'm a big human and I'm coming here. And he's like, I'm not going to stop that from happening. This isn't my area. But every other part of his game is just sort of quiet, efficient, and good. And I feel confident when he's on the ice. It's just that is the one thing that I keep kind of sort of grounding myself in is, and we've talked about this before, but, you know, you get to a playoff series and all of a sudden there's this big line and I could see them getting a cycle going behind the net and it's Sandin and it's Liljegren down there and I'm like, oh boy, I don't feel good right now. This is a bad feeling. It's a bad zone.
Yeah, that's one of those concerns that, like, is this a good regular season team or is this a good team? Because I'm the same way. I really like the way it's looked so far, but I can see a world where against better teams where it doesn't feel quite as good. I thought last night, though, there was a nice highlight package about Travis Dermott and how he really deferred to Sandin in terms of on regroups. You know, they would hinge the puck back to Sandin. He would start skating it up and hinge it back to Sandin. Like, it was like a consistent, like, I have a better idea, you know, instead of me trying to make a play with this, why don't I let Sandin do it? And I thought that let them get out of their own end and get through the neutral zone a little bit better. So, and, you know, on the whole, in the big picture, regular season, that sort of thing is going to be wonderful for you. But yes, better teams, tighter checking, I'm with you. It's still a place of concern for me.
With respect to Sandin and his two pairings with Liljegren and Dermott, the fancy stats tend to really like those pairings in terms of puck possession. That is basically, though, a leaderboard that's, hey, which defensive pairings are playing the most sheltered minutes? When you're trying to figure out, you know, what Sandin is big picture, because, you know, at some point we saw early in this year, Muzzin might eventually enter a decline phase and you might just need to see fully what you have in Sandin ahead of paying him. Do you think there's a case to be made to trying him in tougher minutes, maybe even getting him a little bit of time with Brody just to see how far you can extend that? Or is this, you know, for this year, he's a sheltered minutes guy and just let him succeed in that role?
Well, I do think that you would like to see him up the lineup, play more minutes against tougher competition. I absolutely think that's something. I do think that the Leafs are making that a priority this year. Keefe has alluded to that, talking about 10-game sets for lines. He's like, you know, we'll give Richie another 10-game set with these guys, which is another topic. But, you know, there is some idea that they want to get a look at all these players in different places. So certainly Sandin up the lineup would be that. But I also get the vibe that they recognize how important winning is and this, you know, getting to the top of this division. And you think this sort of thing will happen organically throughout the course of the season, you know, whether it's, you know, Muzzin gets hurt or Riley gets hurt or whatever the case may be. I think they'll probably ride it out for another 10, 20 games and just see if that opportunity comes up. And then if it doesn't, maybe they look at forcing his way up the lineup for a few games.
Well, I can't believe how confident I am in this team. I really am. Like,
that's
and
bizarre.
I know. And it's so, the most bizarre part about it is that I was in such a sour place at the end of the playoffs last year that I was like, I don't care. You know, like, it, just get to the playoffs. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know how I'm going to do 82 games of this. I really dreaded it. I was having private conversations, probably even with you, about how I was terrified of having to talk about this team for the course of a regular season. And this was not the scenario I saw. I saw them being a good regular season team. I saw them being solid. But when they started the year the way that they did, I went, you know what? Maybe that's no surprise. I thought it would be more likely that they would be broken than they would round into this shape, into this form. And I got to tell you, even with all this stuff about tighter checking games and the question marks that this team does have, sure, they're always going to be there. And they're always, always, always going to be reasonable to point out. because how could they not be? But I actually do feel like this immeasurable level of confidence that it actually is going to be a little bit different in those spots and that they are preparing for them in a better way moving forward. Like, I really do. And I think a lot of credit goes to a lot of different places. I know I'm vulnerable. It is what it is. I'm fine. But I keep looking at them, though, Bourne, and go, you know, Mikheyev's going to slot in here for a guy that has zero goals in a million games now and Nick Ritchie. Like, boy, he can't. Can someone get him an empty netter? Like, can they just put him on the ice?
Dying.
Can they just, can he just tip one home? Can he just get one off his skate? Like, I just actually am at the point now. I'm like, man, everyone, like, David Kampf has multiple goals. Like, he's picked some corners. Like, you can't get one.
I know. I felt terrible when I saw the highlights of Sheldon on the ice with Richie after practice. No. Like, the two of them. Like, we've had our, you know, hyper-intensive thought skills coaches with Richie. We've had all these sort of strategies. He's on the best line. They're like, no. Now the head coach is going to stand out there after practice and watch you make plays around the net. And I forget who put the video on Twitter. But it was like Richie kicking pucks around his feet and making no plays, and I was just like, oh, this is my personal hell. Like, the poor guy, he's got to be dying at this point.
Yeah, I swear the Leafs, I swear I could think about a scenario where the Leafs end up trading him, though. They do like a flip of two guys.
No, and then he goes and lights it up.
Yeah he finishes like 12 goals in 22 games or something stupid like that, and he's actually like red hot, and people go, this is the guy. He's finally feeling comfortable outside Toronto. The pressure's off him, you know. He just goes to an irrelevant place, and that's the way it works out.
I keep telling myself, he scored 15 in 56 games last year. He's got about 60 games to go this season. Like, can he get 10?
No.
Can he get 10?
Well, you, except for everyone loves that stat, except for then I say, look at his whole career, though. You know, like,
all right.
But then step back and look at all the numbers, and it's like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Those.
Well, never scored.
Justin Bourne, things are good. It's always great having you.
Love it, guys. You guys have a wonderful week. Beautiful, sunny Toronto winter wonderland.
Aww,
Christmas
too.
Tree's looking great, too, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks to my wife for grabbing
creepy
that.
Creepy as sounds like he's looking in your window.
He's like, oh, it looks right.
Oh, yeah, I'm outside.
Maybe move the star a bit to the left on the top.
Maybe you could fill my water dish.
He's out in the backyard. Silver bells. He's just watching your family. It's not good. He's a cat guy now, though. You guys are all on Team Cat. Bourne, see you, buddy.
Meow.
Oh. It was a little meow. Yeah. And if you like,
sent us a cat meme.
I did. It was good.
During the show today. It was a good one.
It was a cat doing sit-ups. If a cat can do sit-ups, I can do sit-ups. I need to get back in shape. So when I see that, I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
Motivation.
When I see that, when I see a cat doing sit-ups.
Like being more active than I am. I'm like,
that's when I go, hey, it's time for me to do sit-ups.
And if you like the vibes around the Leafs.
Sure.
How about going to a Leafs game for free? We're giving away a pair of tickets to the Leafs' December 7th game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. All you have to do is download today and tomorrow's episodes of The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts, and listen for the code word that we place throughout the episode. Then you text the code word to 590-590 to be entered in for a chance to win. Each code word counts as one entry. The winner will be selected on Wednesday, December 1st. So if you want to see the Leafs smashed Columbus Blue Jackets, all you got to do is listen for my sneaky little code word placed throughout the podcast.
Beat the blue right off those jackets.
That's right.
Quickly, before we take the break, you asked Bourne the thing about the confidence boost. I'm guessing that when you asked that question, that's because you are seeing a confident hockey team.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And there's so much to be said about winning on the road. Like, it's an extra added feeling when you can string together road wins. You truly become road warriors. And I think that is so understated when, you know, winning at home, you're in the comfortable space, you have your routines. Winning on the road is extra hard. The fact that they're doing that and they're stringing together wins, you can just see the energy on the bench. Like, they're smiling. I love that when people, you know, do screen grabs of the TV and it's the guys having fun and smiling and still producing. And it's not like they're losing confidence or losing attention, because you can also get carried away and you can be, well, this is really fun and it's so much fun to win. They still have that competitive energy. So things are great. I'm bought in. I'm all in. Mm-hmm. Daryl from Toronto texted in saying that he's surprised that you are in on the roller coaster and that he thought you would have your guard up. But
the thing is, though, is that's the reason I'm not, is because it hasn't been a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that changes. Again, this is an 82 game season. I'm never going to be afraid of having a take and then having it evolve.
Yeah.
That's sports. Things change. But as of right now, that's what I'm so impressed by, is that it isn't a roller coaster every night. Jack is playing well, but he's not saving their ass every single game.
Right.
He's playing really well. He's just a part of it. And so when I look at the team as a whole, I'm going, what are the question marks I have? So far, the forwards, they look good.
Mm-hmm.
There's one guy who isn't performing up to his contract right now, and it's a guy who can be replaced by someone who kind of fits in perfectly on the third line.
Who's like, just waiting in the
looks like
IR.
He was built for that third line. The veterans look healthy. They look engaged. I really believe in the whole Wayne Simmons not coming in here, believing he had to just be a face puncher, remembering that he has real talent.
He's looking amazing.
Exactly, and that if he just took care of himself and he didn't put that burden on his shoulders, that he might be able to get back to closer to the Wayne Simmons that we've seen so far this season. The Bunting signing has been pretty well damn exactly what you expected it to be.
Exactly.
Kerfoot is playing like the Kerfoot of the playoffs last year and has finally found a home on a wing. Marner's doing Marner things. Matthews isn't even having to care. Like, this doesn't feel like a team that Matthews is carrying. What did I say earlier in the year? That Matthews is the identity of the team, right? If Matthews goes and he's just dominating play, that everything else falls in line. He hasn't been dominant, and things have been falling in line. The Kampf, Kasha line, if those two stay healthy, I have a lot of faith in a playoff series to continue doing what they're doing. Like, my biggest question mark is, do they have a tough enough third pairing on their D if they play a team with more physicality in a postseason series? Like, that's a really great problem to have.
if that's at the top of your list.
Yeah.
And it's something that, I don't know, it's,
they might have
it's
three
early
goalies
for this,
now.
But yeah, and it's like, you can always address these things if they persist as not even issues, because it's a non-issue right now. It's just a curiosity, mostly. Also a curiosity.
Yeah.
How do you change your approach when you're a back catcher and your pitcher only throws two pitches?
Couldn't tell you, but someone else can.
And we talked about that with Danny Jansen last week.
We did. And we're also going to talk. Yeah, but
how do you
new,
do it?
New
we two, found out. We
yeah,
asked.
Well, guess what? Well, he's got a new two-pitch pitcher. To worry about. We're going to talk to Caleb Joseph, who has caught Kevin Gausman more than any catcher in Gausman's career. Also had a cup of coffee with the Blue Jays, and he's the vibes coordinator. So what a better way to end the show. Caleb Joseph coming up next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. It's 9:35. Today has just cruised by, eh?
Quote, Drake kills it in headlines. Kevin Gausman, August 2011. That's
it
why
it was foreshadowing. Meant to be.
Tampering since 2011.
Drake probably made it happen. He's all over the...
Yeah, where is Drake for the Blue Jays?
You know what? I agree. No.
I mean, he had KD in a David Price jersey. That's like one of the top 10 Blue Jays moments of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he took that tampering charge at OVO Fest.
Yeah, 25K.
For making people chant KD's name.
Yeah, light work.
Of all the things that are tampering that get done in the NBA, that is the one. Sure.
So someone that knows the Blue Jays' newest member quite well.
What are you going to say about tampering?
No, this guy doesn't know anything about kid tampering. Caleb Joseph, former Orioles and Jays catcher, a vibes coordinator for the Seattle Mariners. Good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. I got to ask. I'm definitely the vibes coordinator for this show. Without me, the show would not have the energy. So how do I like add that to my resume to get paid for?
That's a great question. I think it's something that we just have in our mental space. You know, it's something that doesn't really go. It's very flying under the radar with the resume stuff. It's one of those things that you know it. Everybody else knows it in the room, but sometimes they're a little bit scared to admit it because everybody wants to be the top dog, right?
Yeah, we're like the glue guys, eh? The good energy, the vibes. Yeah,
It's very Pacific Northwest to label it, though, you know? Like, it's very Pacific Northwest to be like, you know what it's about? It's about good vibes.
I just love that you've taken that and run with it. So as we were teeing up, Blue Jays have a new face for us. You know him quite well as someone that's played alongside Kevin Gausman for a while. Can you tell us a little bit about the guy that's coming in and why Blue Jays fans should be excited?
Sure. Yeah. Kevin is a good friend of mine. We were together for many years in Baltimore. Started playing together in 13 in Double A, and then all the way through 2018. And Kevin is—he's just when I think of Kevin, one word comes to mind: in dependable is the number one word that comes to mind. And he was always there, healthy, ready to make his starts, incredibly professional. He has a funny side to him that is a little bit geeky, quirky type. He's got a very unique laugh. There's a lot that Kevin's going to bring to that clubhouse. It's going to be really great. You're talking about being able to mentor guys like Nate Pearson, Merriweather, some of these guys that are still kind of figuring out who they are in the big leagues. Kevin's been there. He's been there, done that. He's had a lot of success inside that league in the AL East, which I think is incredibly important. And he's going to be able to bring some playoff experience to that club as well. But you're getting a total package, and I really think that the Blue Jays fans are going to love this guy. He eats innings. Well, that actually sounds kind of bad. He doesn't eat innings. He dominates innings. So you're talking about any time that he goes out there, you're going to expect 6 to 7, which shortens the game, which keeps the bullpen alive. And you save bullets in that bullpen so you can strike maybe not that night, but the next night or the night after. And it's a way of shortening the season as well. So he's going to bring a lot of things that will help the team, not only the day he starts, but 2 and 3 days down the line.
We're talking to Caleb Joseph, former Orioles and Jays catcher, at YYZ Backstop. So he's Toronto for life on Twitter. Caleb, you've caught Kevin more than anyone has in Kevin's career. And I know he's changed as a pitcher since your time in Baltimore together, but what are we looking at from a stuff and approach standpoint? It's the split finger that gets the headlines, but how does Gausman work on the mound?
Right. He is, 6'3". He has this very unique leg lift, okay? And I remember catching him early on thinking, you know, this fastball is kind of straight. And that's kind of always the key thing that you're looking for is, well, is it straight? Does it move? If it is straight, how does it have deception? How does it have any sort of trickery to it? And so when you're back there, sometimes you just don't get it. And it takes having to stand up against the guy to figure it out. I think about Darren O'Day as well. When I'm catching Darren O'Day back in the day, very, very easy to catch, very difficult to hit. There was one spring training when I finally stood up against Kevin Gausman in the box in a spring training interleague play or inner squad game, and it was totally different than what it was catching him in terms of the life of the fastball. And we knew he had life to it. It's going to run up there 95, 97, but what we now know is that's spin rate, right? So he's got that high-spinning fastball. And the way that he pulls his leg up and the way that he delivers that pitch, and because he has such incredible wingspan, his arms are, I mean, goodness, they almost come down to his knees when he's standing still. So he has incredible extension on releasing that ball. He creates a unique side when he throws that ball. It just explodes at you, and it's halfway there, and you think you're right on time, but believe it or not, it's almost already by you. And so he has great deception, and it's one thing with that fastball. You're going to have it because it is a little bit straighter. Now he runs it up there 95, 97 miles an hour, but again, it's that split finger really that has changed his game. And he's throwing that fastball mainly at the top of the zone. We always kept trying to get him to throw it low in the zone, and we were wrong. We were absolutely wrong. Knowing that the way his ball spins and the way that he, because of that deception, because of that extension at release, he needs to be throwing the ball more in the upper quadrant to help create that type of perception. But it's a split. It's the split. You nailed it earlier. It's a split that has really taken over for him, and he's able to throw it in any count behind, ahead, early. And it's such a devastating pitch. Sometimes it drops to the left. Sometimes it drops to the right. Incredibly it's a great insurance policy to both right-handers and left-handers. Mm-hmm. So a lot of right-handers have that, you know, they have that slider to the right-handers, but that slider will have a tendency to be in the down and in honey hole against left-handers, right? So when you have this split that moves primarily just straight down, you have a way of defending yourself against both right and left-handed hitters.
We're talking to Caleb Joseph about Kevin Gausman. And Caleb, I know you had some time with the Blue Jays, so you would have got to know a Danny Jansen or a Reese McGuire or Alejandro Kirk just a little bit. If they hit you up and hey, what's the, not that you should be giving away free, you know, free back catching or coaching labor or anything like that, but they hit you up and hey, what's catching Gausman like? And they're coming from having experience with a very good primarily two-pitch pitcher in Robbie Ray, but Robbie Ray, a guy who throws a little harder and does use that slider that you mentioned instead of the split finger that Kevin uses. What advice would you give to the Jays catchers when it comes to approaching calling a game with Kevin?
It's a great question. It was pretty simple early on. When Kevin was with the Orioles, he was a fastball slider and used a split primarily for put away. I would tell him just be mindful that he can go up and down in the strike zone with the fastball. Wants to probably throw a large portion of those fastballs up as it probably plays better up in the zone. But being able to stick a down and away fastball to a right-handed hitter is always an amazing thing to do. And I personally think sometimes the at-bats, they start there. If you can get a guy leaning out over, if you can change their eye level and change their sights and change all these different things, you can create a lot of different options with those two pitches. Look, if you got up and away, up and in, down and away, and down and in, that's technically four spaces with one pitch with that fastball. And you start creating space with that fastball to then put away with the split, all the while knowing at any point you can go to that split and you're not boxed into just, well, it's not two strikes, so I have to throw the split. He's got a slider that he can get over. That's always a plus. And that split is good enough where you're going to get a lot of weak contact, 1-0, 2-0 on guys that you know are aggressive, going to be trying to cheat to that fastball, because it's not some 89, 90 mile an hour fastball. It's going to be 95, 97. And use some of that to their aggressiveness. So the main thing I would say is make sure you use the fastball to not box yourself in with the split, if that makes any sense. Keep moving the fastball around to set up that split, but don't be afraid to use the split when you have to, when the game's on the line and you really need some weak contact when he's possibly behind in the count.
So we're weirdly familiar with him here in Toronto, not just because of the Baltimore thing, but because the Jays have been pursuing him for a while. And this is the third attempt at trying to get him to be a Toronto Blue Jay. Boom, third time's a charm. They end up signing him. And I'm guessing, you know, you guys are friends. I don't know how much of the stuff that you end up mixing in, but when they were pursuing him last, you were here. You were with this Blue Jays team. And I wonder if there was ever a conversation between you two guys about the team or about, you know, what it was going to be like or coming here or whatever it was, or the potential of being around one another. Because the one thing that I find really curious about always a signing like this is, well, what's changed? Obviously, money is good, right? And they're paying him. He's getting money, he's getting term, and that counts more than anything. You just saw that with Marcus Semien leaving. He's not going to the Rangers because they're a better ball club than the Blue Jays. He's leaving because that's crazy money, and it's awesome for him, and it's best for his family. But the things that are in between the lines, right, where you go, okay, well, Kevin Gausman didn't just get one good offer here. I wonder if there is a bit of an evolving perception around Toronto, because it's tough. There are different restrictions here. They had the Buffalo season. That's always probably looming in guys' minds about like border restrictions and all these different things that come with living in a different country. But also, you know, it seems like a really incredible clubhouse to be a part of right now. They're winning baseball games and they're spending money. And I wonder how much that stuff seemingly weighs in for a guy like that.
I think you nailed it. All of it, all of the above. You've got the big contract that obviously helps a lot. But from what I was reading earlier this morning, he turned down a little bit more in a couple different areas to come to Toronto. And Kevin's a competitor and he wants to win. And once you've tasted playoff baseball, it's really hard to kind of go back and just for real true competitors to even if the money's really good, it's difficult to just take the money and be okay being a 500 team or be okay getting close to the playoffs. And was fortunate to play this year with Kyle Seager in Seattle. And poor guy, been there for 10 years, a great player, and never even sniffed the playoffs. Never. Mm-hmm. Never. And so miserable. I mean, over $100 million contract, happy guy, right? But miserable because he just wanted to play in the playoffs while his brother's making the playoffs every single year over there in Los Angeles. Now, when you relate that back to Kevin, he is one of those guys that really wants to get out there and win, and he wants to be the bulldog for the team. And once you've experienced that type of playoff baseball, you just it's something that really, really thrives. It really drives you. And not to mention being able to go to that team, like you said, that is obviously making some big time noise, knowing the opportunity is going to be there. That's another thing, is knowing for sure, like, this is it. Because, I mean, goodness, just a couple of years ago, he was in Atlanta, right, and didn't go so well, and then went over to Cincinnati and finished a lot of that season in the bullpen. So, of course, that changes because he makes 33 starts, the most in the big leagues this past year, and has under a 3 ERA. But being able to enter that clubhouse as well, knowing that those guys are young and hungry and excited, and it probably feels a little bit like what he had in San Francisco, except knowing they are absolutely going for it. And he's probably asked quite a few people. Mm-hmm. And I do know he enjoyed his time in Toronto, the city itself. And that's important for a guy that's going to sign a long-term deal. Mm-hmm. Being comfortable and enjoying the actual city. And I know that for a fact. We had a couple bullpen dinners is what we called them, and being able to go out and just enjoy Toronto, the great food and just the scenery. Always exciting to be there. But you're right. It's they're doing big things, and they're out there spending money, and they have an incredible core, incredible clubhouse. I'm sure it hasn't changed, but in 2020, it was just so fun to be a part of, so exciting to be a part of. And you could tell these guys are special, and they showed it this past year, and they keep pushing more and more forward. It's going to be exciting for the Jays and Jays fans.
Yeah, one of my favorite things in getting to talk to guys like you about is, you know, you're actually fans of the game as well. And sometimes we as onlookers just treat you guys like you're part of it. And it's like all business. It's all business. It's all business. It's like, hey, you know what drove these guys' passions to get to where they are is that they loved baseball, that they loved the game. They loved watching the games. They didn't just enjoy playing them. And sometimes, yeah, we, you know, that's probably a fault of ours. And as fans, too, where it's like we put you in boxes of just like focusing on your day to day and whatever. But I just like hearing stuff whenever you talk to players about how people notice what's going on in Toronto and that they are excited about Toronto and that they look at what they're building here and say, man, that is a team that you'd want to be a part of. And that is something where Kevin Gausman signs here, that it's not just like, a one-off in Toronto or this is what they're doing. It's like, nah, they signed Barrios. They gave him money. They gave Ryu money a couple of years ago. They gave George Springer money, and they've got a ton of young talent. And yeah, wanting to watch a team like that, wanting to pay attention to a team like that, that I think is exciting, knowing that the baseball world is excited about them.
Oh, they're noticing. There's no question about it. And going over to Seattle this year, I had quite a few questions about, hey, what's this team about? What do you got? You were over there last year. And I said, hey, they're doing it the real way. They're doing it the real deal. They're going out. They've got an incredible young and they're adding just supplemental piece. And I'll tell you, it's I wish I could strap on the cleats and the jock strap again. I want to get out there and get out there on the field with them, you know, but it's exciting. And I remember, what was it, 15, 16, 17 ish around there, when Toronto just powerhouse teams and they're really getting after it. And it's, I can't imagine playing in front of an entire country winning like this. You know, that's got to be just such an amazing feeling. And when they get going, when those Toronto fans get going, boy, they're rowdy. Oh, man. I mean, I think about the 16 playoff game that we had against y'all. I mean, goodness, it just rowdy. And so it's exciting.
A little too rowdy, that one.
That they're making this push. It's exciting they're making this push for the entire country. And you kind of see, I don't know, as an incoming player, you just feel the wave and you feel the momentum of an entire country getting behind their ball team. And the fact that they're back in Toronto, hopefully for an entire season this upcoming year, is going to be incredibly exciting, because you could tell they I mean, I don't know if enough people are talking about that, how their season really took off once they got to Toronto. And I do a lot of that was the fans and just being in front of the crowd.
We're excited.
All the history inside of that building.
We're excited. Jays fans are excited. Caleb Joseph is excited. Caleb, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man. We really appreciate it.
It's great, man. Thanks.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Caleb Joseph, former Orioles and Jays catcher, vibes coordinator. Good stuff on
it's
Kevin Gossman.
The Toronto tax is dead.
Yes.
It's dead. We only have a minute and a half here left because Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair are about to come in for a 10 to 2. You know, they got called in short notice.
I thought it's 10 to 12.
10 to 12,
you always try to give them 2 extra hours, but
look, we do 4 hours.
Only we are the ones with the 4 hours.
Leafs and Raptors.
They were like, we didn't agree to that.
They're like,
Blake
leaving.
Just letting them know right before they go in. Hey, you got 10 to 2. You're on
deck. Yeah, by the way, I'm Blake. I canceled Merrick today. Merrick's not coming on at 12. No, there will be a lot of good stuff 10 to 12 on the Jays. If you missed the earlier part of that interview with Caleb Joseph or us talking Gossman on our own or with Ben Nicholson Smith, check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It's the Fan Morning Show. Leafs and Raptors both off tonight. Your Seahawks, JD, minus one at Washington. How you feeling?
Well, Good Morning Football is on our television right now, and it's Michael Robinson talking with a graphic underneath him that says, what do you think about the state of the Seahawks?
Yeah.
And I can summarize it right now. You just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
I just get it over with. That's all the state of the Seahawks. Get it over with. 2021, get it over with.
Good start to the week. Good start to the offseason for the Toronto Blue Jays, Kevin Gossman. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Get to a little more Leafs and Rap stuff. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. Blair and Barker coming up next.
This guy is a bad guy.